good day to you from episode 4 of our new podcast series, Project Breakaway, a metaphorical and literal time in the day when we here at Predator Cycling take some time away from working in the back of the shop to come and share with our listeners what we're doing, how we're doing it, and what it takes to do it. Our ideas, our innovative success stories, and even our missteps and failures. If you find yourself with an interest in bicycles, composite manufacturing, out-of-the-box design, or even curiosities beyond, I encourage you to stick with us, settle in, and learn a little. I'm Courtney B., co-owner and project manager of Predator Cycling. I'm here with my partner, RM Goganian, the other co-owner, CEO, lead designer, and engineer, and pretty face of Predator Cycling. RM, how's it going over there?
Ooh, I got a pretty face.
On a good day.
I'm doing really well today.
Just had the holidays.
Yeah.
We survived.
We did. We survived the COVID holiday.
The Zoom, I think I counted 7 Zoom, Duo, Facebook Messenger. What do they call it? Facebook?
Messenger.
Messenger.
Yeah.
Video Messenger.
Yeah.
So many calls.
Yeah, it was pretty hectic.
I mean, we didn't have to get dressed. I didn't have to wear makeup. Mm-mm. But, man.
It's a lot.
It's just like, you know.
And time zones. And
time zones, different countries, the technology. The nap schedules and the technically challenged family on the other side.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of
tech support.
Tech support and a lot of slow talking at the screen. Do you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Anyway,
and then doing it all over again.
Yeah. So we survived. And here we are.
Good.
Back at work.
Yep.
So we are finally going to touch on design simulation today after a 2-week pause.
Woohoo.
So RM, what is it? What is design simulation? How do we use it? How is its evolution in the bike industry, and more specifically, how has it catapulted Predator here, and how are we going about using design to improve our concepts and finally visualize all these crazy theories in your head and to, you know, use the shape optimization for practical use?
Yeah, so there's the way we use simulation here, we kind of use it in two fundamental ways. One is in this like design simulation that you were talking about, and that's what we refer to that as in the early process for us. So when we're, you know, conceptualizing sketches and getting stuff together, and when we first start on a project and a new product, introducing simulation at the very, very beginning, that's what we're talking about, design simulation, because that quickly guides us in the direction of the way the product should go.
So you're not an artist in a sense of paper, pencil.
No.
So you have, let's say, RM comes and he has an idea. That's silly. RM always has an idea. He doesn't come. And he probably has a portfolio in his mind of a bazillion things.
Uh-huh.
But I only allow him to work on maybe 4 or 5 things.
Yeah.
So you have an idea for a bike.
That's on a good
You're
week.
Not that crazy guy drawing a bike on a paper napkin. No. What are you doing?
I go straight into design tools.
So you your computer.
I open
You're
my computer.
You're that guy.
I am the guy that opens up my computer, and I go into Fusion 360 or into Rhino, and I start modeling.
You're the guy in college who, I'm talking college, early 2000s, who had the laptop taking notes. I'm here in 2020. Yes. I handwrite everything before I type it up. That's not you.
No.
Okay.
No, I don't. You don't want to see me handwrite anything.
So how do you start? You have a design in your head.
I have a design in my head. Sometimes I'll do something on the whiteboard. Usually I do it on the whiteboard if I'm trying to explain it to you and we're having a conversation about it and I don't want to pull it up.
I just want to let listeners know that the whiteboard to me is just a bunch of chicken scratch.
It's pretty bad. But yeah, I'll sometimes use a whiteboard, but very seldomly. I go straight into Fusion or Rhino, and I start sketching out concepts. Usually I start with on a bike, like on our bike frames, I have a parametrically driven 3D sketch.
What does that mean? I don't know what that means.
It's a sketch that's basically I can update. So if I want to change geometries, I can change the angles.
So if you want to make a bike your size for very long-legged people, or you want to make a bike my size for very I'm average. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Perfectly, you're perfect in every way.
Perfect in every way. You can just make that, and you can make those changes.
And those are kind of like the hard points. So, like, I'll adjust the bottom bracket heights, the headset angle, like the head tube angles, headsets, or the races, what style I'm using, like those kind of hard points. I'll update instantly in my drawing that I've already built, and then I will go into, you know, into T-splines or into sub-Ds or whatever modeling system I'm going to use, however I'm going to design it.
And T-spline is what?
T-spline is a proprietary software that's inside of Fusion. It's
proprietary by Autodesk.
Autodesk owns it. They bought T-splines 5 or 6, 7 years ago, maybe mm-hmm. more. And it's a sub-D modeling, so it's...
And sub-D is what? Sub-dimensional.
So you basically... It looks like... It's basically using plane surfaces to affect complex curves. So you can basically, it's like clay molding in modeling. So you can take a block and actually just grab and push and pull it and move it in directions that you want and create surfaces and angles and faces.
But how do you make a frame of a bike? I mean, you don't just start pulling off of a mold and making a tube, do you?
I have
a base model.
I have a base model, basically. I have a system that I basically start with, and I have all of my surfaces and high tolerance, like my everything that needs to have a specific tolerance, like a bearing race or a thread fitting or some sort of clearance issue. I already have surfaces built for those.
Just the industry standards?
It started with industry standards. And then
now
it's
the predator standards. Okay.
And so I basically just evolved that and I have a massive library of models. I mean, I think I have 200 or 300 models, submodels.
And
now, you
model everything down to like the screw,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think... Joe Schmo looking at your model online is like, oh, it doesn't look great, blah, blah, blah. He pulled this from somewhere. I'm like, no, you actually sat down and designed that.
Yeah.
And you actually talked to a real designer, which I know I'm not making this up because I sit and I listen to all of his conference calls. And actual designers give him many, many compliments.
So we model more so than me
because I'm Joe Schmo going, I don't know what you just did.
So we model everything. I actually model in my threads as well in most cases. So... which plays a really big factor when you get into the simulation side. So we have massive libraries of models, assemblies, all kinds of stuff.
And you just don't model. I mean, we're talking about bikes right now specifically, but you model everything.
Yeah.
You've modeled the floor plan of our shop.
Uh-huh.
You modeled our son's push bike uh-huh. and threw it in simulation in case uh-huh. you want to know how fast roll downhill.
I did that. I also ran simulation on CFD simulation for our air vents in our shop.
Oh.
Just for fun.
Okay. I didn't know that.
I'd done it just because.
Sounds like a great time to me.
I was testing out one of our new softwares and I didn't know what to do it with. So.
Okay. Yeah. So we're talking about simulation. So you make a bike mm-hmm. in Fusion or Rhino.
Yep.
And then what?
So once we have like a rough shape of what we're trying to do, we then, I'll go into ANSYS Discovery, which is a real-time simulation engine. It's a really cool program. You can design in it as well. I'm not as quick as designing in it as I am in Rhino and Fusion. So I usually start in Rhino and Fusion, model out what I'm trying to do, bring it into ANSYS Discovery, and then in there, I can actually run simulation. So I can run CFD, I can run
CFD was computational fluid dynamics, which yes. we discussed, which explain
so it's basically
what you're doing with that.
It's basically a virtual wind tunnel. So I can look at...
Is it just a wind tunnel or does it tell other things?
Well, correct? So the CFD portion of it is essentially, for how we use it in the bike industry, is essentially a wind tunnel.
Okay.
We can also, in Discovery, run thermal dynamics. We can run static loads. We can run topology optimization. We can run other types of simulation.
So, potential force and a crash.
Yeah, buckling loads.
Talking thermal, so what, leaving your bike on in the sun for so long?
But okay. Like we wouldn't use, I mean, thermal is not really relevant to bike industry. I mean, there's not very many relevant. We don't look at thermals inside of bikes. Now, we do thermals for our molds. All of our thermal dynamics for our molds are all calculated in Discovery. I use a lot of in Discovery.
And we have learned That's very important.
Yes, thermal dynamics is very important when you're making molds. Yes. But so we can actually take, like, for instance, like a head tube, like the RF20, one of the things that we spent a lot of time on was the head tube design of it, and really looking at how those bearing races are and the profile of that head tube and really making it lean and transition into other tubes. Now, in typical simulation structures, you model this all out, you build your assemblies, you then throw it into a modeling engine, a simulation engine, and then you set it all up, and then you run it, and then it usually takes anywhere from a couple minutes to a couple hours, maybe even days, depending on how complicated the part you're running and how sophisticated your hardware is. And then you take those results, go back into design, update, change, and repeat.
Right.
And this can take days. I mean, this could take weeks, this process.
Years, actually.
Yes, it could. It could take totally, it could take years to perfect.
So simulation early in this design eliminates any possible flaws of performance that you might find after manufacturing.
Yeah, and you could also, it could also speed up that process. Like, we can actually now design and simulate within minutes. I mean, within seconds, we're getting feedback.
So when people look at your new frame, your RF20, and they say, why is that so skinny? Why is that line like that? You could actually say, I threw it in a test, and let me tell you why.
So, and it also helps you, like, kind of understand what direction you're going to model in early on. So, like, very early on, there's, on the down tube of the RF20, there's this, like, ridge that comes off of the bottom race of the head tube and goes down the down tube. And that ridge came from CFD simulations.
Right.
It came from the understanding on how the airflow is going over that tube in that fork area, and at the same time trying to build mass so we could get some torsional stiffness on the front head tube. So that area was just, all of that shape there comes from both structural and CFD simulations.
And those areas have gone through so many changes.
Oh yeah, it's
I know there's photos online available of the RF20, and it's had so many iterations because mm-hmm. we use this bike as a teaching device in our design software shows that we've done at Autodesk University, that you've done in other webinars. So,
yeah, we just did one with KeyShot and
right.
And
so video. You know, there's a lot of information on this bike that is both current and old.
Yep.
So we're really working on the frame still. We have the final design now.
Yeah, the final design's there. It's actually not on the site.
That's just bad marketing on our end. But we do. We're working on the bike, and we are in coming up here in the new year, releasing the final and full version. It is a labor of love and a work in process. And And the thing is, we invite anyone to contact us if you have any questions about this frame.
Yeah, for sure. Reach out.
Iron will talk to you for hours about it.
Yes.
I mean, I might actually tell him to hang up on you and get some work done, but...
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, no, and...
Any questions, please reach out on any social media.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I'm always on it. I'll respond.
And the other thing, too, is the RF20 is really... it is a product itself, but it is one of our new manufacturing platforms and showcasing what we've been working on for all these years.
Specifically in the design and simulation realm.
Design, yes.
So, because that's where we're at now in Predator and going forward with most of our products.
Yeah.
So speaking of more products.
Yes.
Let's talk about the water bottle gauge that we're working on.
Yeah. So kind of a little... So when we talked about the simulated design for the RF20, the RF20 started as a model, and then we introduced simulation to it very early on. The water bottle cage is really interesting because it started in simulation.
It's a product 100% designed specifically in simulation, for simulation, by simulation. That's a cool art piece.
Yeah.
And a functional generative design. So discuss generative design.
Okay, so in generative design, and when I'm speaking about generative design, we're in most cases talking about using it inside of Autodesk tools. And we basically, within most Autodesk tools, you can use generative, and generative allows you to define loads, mounting locations, and restraints on a product, on an object, and then let AI and generative design,
artificial intelligence,
Yes, artificial intelligence allow you to create a part.
It's cooler when you say it like that, by the way.
All right.
Artificial intelligence.
Artificial intelligence. Yeah.
So, and that's what generative does. And it's incredibly interesting. It's incredibly powerful. It kind of takes your bias away from that you have as a designer and engineer. And it's one of the reasons I like it so much. But you can really use the software to help you leverage your materials, your property, your manufacturing process, everything to design a part.
So in layman's terms, you put in your hard points, your mounting points, mm-hmm. your weight requirements, et cetera, mm-hmm. and you throw it into the software and it spits out a bazillion different iterations for you.
Yes.
And from those,
you can basically filter it out based on different parameters that you have and work on it. And the way we, it's a relatively complicated workflow, but we start there and then we get a model that we like. And then from there, we do some
massaging
to make it work a little better and get rid of some surfacing issues.
And to look more like a predator design.
Yeah.
You work on it.
And also just to understand like some of the load forces and stuff. And then from there, we actually go into Ansys Discovery. And in Ansys Discovery, we can fine tune. Well, one of the restrictions you have in Fusion is that you can't put in custom materials. So we need custom materials. So we go into Ansys and actually design and build out all our custom materials and then put that into the parts and then finalize our analysis. And we use their topology optimization, which is very similar to generative because you can directly input it based on the results. So you can, the way generative kind of like builds these structures, you can in Ansys, because you're watching it live happen, you can actually, as it's live running, you can go in there and say, okay, I'm gonna add a little more material here, I'm gonna change this, and you can make design changes as it's simulating.
Right.
And then that's how we finalize that design.
Now, a water bottle cage was not on our radar. We weren't like, we're gonna make the coolest water bottle cage ever.
No.
We were teaching a generative design class for Autodesk University, so we decided to make a water bottle cage.
Yeah, that's an example.
And it is not going to be made out of composite carbon. We're specifically designing this part to be 3D printed.
Yep.
Why? Because it's cool. But you can explain better.
Why? Because it's cool. So a couple things. We've talked about in previous episodes. We use 3D print here a lot for tooling and setting up. And we've always thought of using it for direct printing of products. It's always been something we've talked about. We've never done it. One of the issues we never did it is we couldn't optimize it to the level that we needed to. With recent new software with Ansys and new hardware that we have now here, we can. And so we decided to give it a shot. And the water bottle cage was the first thing up. And we actually got it down to price point so that it made sense. And could be manufactured at scale. And the other thing that you think about is, you know, we mostly do everything in composites, but we do it in composites because that's the best way to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Not because we just want to make everything in composites.
And a carbon water bottle cage is just not like an optimal product.
It's not.
It's a cool product.
It's very
but
cool.
But, you know.
And people make really good water bottle cages out of composites.
Correct.
But when you start looking at the weight of the product, the durability of the product,
the functionality, and the price point.
When you start balancing all of these things, you can achieve most of all of that outside of composites. And with direct 3D printing of products, you can actually make a really cool cage.
And just the generative design quality of the water bottle cage is just complementary to the RF20 mm-hmm. because the RF20 does have generative design mm-hmm. base parts in mm-hmm. it that we,
yeah.
you know, massaged and made our own. So it kind of complements.
Yeah, for sure.
Them.
It's also, yeah, it's an interesting and clever way to make a part. And I think this for us is going to be a gateway into many new parts.
It's scalable.
Yes.
It's competitive against composites in terms of strength, durability,
mm-hmm.
and it's competitive because of price.
Yeah.
And
it's competitive against, and you have to also realize that, I mean, I think there's only one or two water bottle cages that are composite that are made in the States. I think there's only one. There may be another one, but 99% is made overseas.
Correct.
parts.
And there's a multitude of reasons that we made this. First of all, everything kind of sort of aligned. We partnered with some amazing software and hardware companies that mm-hmm. made the design easily accessible to us.
Yep.
We got into more and 3D printing, higher quality 3D printing, mm-hmm. everything aligned. And COVID happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it created a bunch of issues in supply chain parts for bicycles and the entire industry. There was a lot of things. The material started being poor quality.
Yep.
The injected plastics of previous water bottle cages had faded colors. They didn't match. We had customers that weren't pleased with the quality. It was affected our brand. So we decided, let's change it. Let's make our own.
Yep.
Let's do it here in the United States.
And that whole supply chain issue started coming up, and it was just like, and we started looking at some of the prices too that were going up, and it's like, wait, how much are you charging for this?
Prices in general are just ridiculous.
I'm looking at some of these prices, and I'm like, this doesn't make sense. I'm not going to pay that much for this. So,
and we're talking about our industry, our boutique bicycle industry. It might make sense for other companies. But for us, we can scale this. We can scale this 3D print type of components going forward
mm-hmm.
in addition to our carbon fiber composites.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So we're super excited. So you start in the next couple of weeks, you'll start seeing our some designs coming out.
Yeah. We're running test parts right now.
Yeah. We've been printing out test parts and getting production batches ready.
We're learning our way around this 3D printer.
Yes. Yeah. We got a new printer. So, and then the other thing that we should, I mean, our goal is to have them for sale next month.
Yes.
End of the month.
On the website. Probably also available on Amazon.
Yeah. We're excited. We're super excited for this. And it is the first part that we have, like I said before, is entirely designed in simulation and AI.
Oh. I silenced my phone, but I did not unvibrate it. If anyone's curious, my son's doing well at daycare. Let's see. So we were talking about, did you want to mention our partnerships with companies that help us?
So yeah, I mean, we've been working with, if you follow us on anything, it's no surprise. We've been working with NVIDIA now for
a few months.
Yeah, six, 7 months now we've been working with them. Mm-hmm. We were one of the first ones to test out the RTX A6000, which is a monster of a GPU. And we've been using that, and that led to a partnership with Lenovo. So we've been testing out their P620, which is a monster workstation. And then also we moved all of our laptops over. We're using the
P53. I'm looking at it right now because you hear this podcast because of my Lenovo P53.
So we're using their hardware.
Running on my Adobe Audition. If Adobe would like to also give me some software, that'd be awesome.
One of the reasons we've been able to scale out our design simulation work is because we have hardware that can leverage it.
Absolutely. I mean, none of this was this. Literally, I think I said earlier we were catapulted.
Yes.
I don't know why I enunciated that so bad. We were catapulted because of this amazing partnership.
Yeah.
These partnerships.
Yeah, no, it's been because I attempted to try this about a year ago, a year and a half ago. I tried to use a lot of the same technologies that we're using now to figure out how to make this and make it cost effective. And every time I did it, I spent more time than I should have on it, and I could never make it scale. It just didn't work. I couldn't make it work. And the limitation that we had was strictly. Well, it was some software limitation we had at that point, but it was the biggest limitation we had was our hardware. Our computers just couldn't figure it out fast enough to give us the results that we needed.
You literally set like a simulation to run, and then we would just go home and come back the next day.
And I would still, and it still didn't. It still hadn't finished.
Right.
Figuring, I mean.
Or had frozen and crashed.
Yeah, that too.
But now ARM just is like, hey, babe, come over here. Watch this. And then instantaneously.
Which
I love.
Yeah.
Because I have little patience.
Yeah. No, it's pretty ridiculous. We're able to compute so much work now that we're able to do it. And that's entirely why we're actually pushing into this 3D printing space mm-hmm. more is because we now have the hardware and software that we can leverage it. So,
right. So what can we look forward to on future podcasts going into the new year? We plan on inviting some of these guests,
yeah.
some of these partnerships, software companies, hardware companies, some of their reps and friends that we have with them, as well as maybe some former customers,
yeah,
current customers.
Yeah.
And if any future customers would like to be on my podcast, bye bike. And then I don't know, maybe maybe we'll invite your mom on.
Yeah, why not?
Former owner of Predator Cycling.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're gonna figure out that whole calling in thing next year. We're good at a lot of things, but audio engineering is maybe further down on the list.
Yeah, no.
Maybe like fourth or fifth.
That's pretty high.
Yeah, it's pretty high.
Well, that's pretty good.
Okay, well, we thank you for choosing to take some time with us, and we look forward to future breakaways. I'll try my hardest to put any mentions in our news section on predatorcycling.com. Also, look for us on Instagram and LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and in person here in Tennessee. Aaron, let's go get back to work. Please share, like, and subscribe. We're available on all major streaming platforms. Anyway, thanks for listening, and have a good one, and find some time to break away.